And at this time, it's my real pleasure to be able to introduce to you Father Vaughn.
The sun maketh the clearer sky, the rose maketh the butterfly, the morning dew may kiss the grass, and you, my friends. I consider class. Boy. Now, I really don't know, honest to gosh, I really don't know where I am. I speak a little bit funny as if I say the word out about our house, everybody always asks me, where do you come from? And my real home is Montreal, Canada. And they said, oh, geez, up in Canada, all they got is loose-living women and hockey players. I say, watch it, Mac. My 86-year-old mother lives in Montreal. Yeah, what team does she play for, right? But Bud picks me up this afternoon and brings me to the hotel and hands me this magazine. And I said, how many people are around here? He tells me. I said, well, I get a little bit nervous. And here it is. Who's this? It's in your hotel room. If you don't think I'm telling the truth, go upstairs and check it. Travel Post, y'all got one of these? You're staying here, right? Speech anxiety common among even the most accomplished speakers. This is how you get rid of speech anxiety. Winston Churchill said that he used to calm his nerves before speaking by thinking of his audience sitting in their underwear. Now, do you know how ridiculous you look? See, I think, I don't know what Putt was trying to do to me, but I really feel pretty secure because Putt has to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to drive me back to the airport because I have to get back to Detroit to catch another plane to go play hockey on a hockey team, which I'll talk about. But the wives are very charitable. They went out and bought some alarm clocks. Golfers' alarm clocks, that's an in-joke, and since I'm being taped, I'm not going to explain it to you, but it's sure to work. It's a little candle that you put someplace in the anatomy, and when the candle burns down to the right hour which you've marked, the person automatically wakes up. So use your imagination. So I feel sure he's going to be up knocking on my door here because he already had to wake me up once today. Yeah, my name is Father Vaughn, Father Quinn, Father Vaughn, and I am an alcoholic, and that's why I'm here. And I really think this is a fantastically good turnout. My God, you know, over 500 people for your first time at this part of the state, and you're really to be commended on that. And what we will talk about is all the different aspects of AA, of recovery. And especially to the new people that are here, the people that are just in the program a short time. You are the most important people in this room. And everything I say tonight will be stolen right out of this book. In case you haven't seen this, this is called a big book, okay? Because when I was locked up in a Twitch farm, and that's how I got in AA, because the nurse said to me, oh gosh, she was a lovely lady. I can even remember her name, but she was great. She was very talented. So this was a nut house. And talented. Hell, she played defensive end with the Chicago Bears for 8 years. And she said, the doctor thinks you should go to an AA meeting tonight in the hospital. I said, what? Me? A Catholic priest with 7 degrees and the holy oils of ordination hardly dried on my hands? Because I'd already been there. I hadn't even been ordained a year. And I said, oh, gosh, I can't go there. Those drunks. Go a bunch of drunks and get help. I said, nurse, go on upstairs and have some shock treatment. I think you've had a psychotic break. And then I said, being a con artist, I said, will that help me get out of the hospital? And she said, yes, it will. I said, I'll go. I would have gone to Child Molesters Anonymous that night if I thought that was the way out of the hospital. But somebody had given me one of these books, not this one because this is a new one, and said, read it. And I said, geez, I got degrees in ontology and epistemology and cosmology. I can't read all this stuff. So I just threw it on my bedside table there in the nut house and left it there. Now, this was in Dyer, Indiana, And the alcoholic stayed in that nut house 14 days, and then they left. Now, I stayed there 6 months. And so they were coming back in for the second and third time, being carried in, and I'm still there. And they're carried in loaded, saying, "Holy cadoodle, Quinn, you're still here? Boy, you're really sick." So I went back to my room and checked in the big book, you know, discharge from a nut house, you know. How to get out of a twitch farm, you know, and that's when I started reading the big book. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight, in all earnestness. Now, there are 45 pages in this book, and here they are. Page 58 to 103. Now, if I was to go to the American Cancer Foundation and say, I have 45 pages, if the people suffering, whoever ever had to suffer from cancer, and all of the families with them, and all the human suffering, and broken dreams, and broken homes, and wasted carnage, and all the billions of dollars, I guarantee if people would live by what's prescribed there, never again would they ever have to suffer any of the deleterious effects of cancer. You know, I could sell those pages for about, oh God, $10 zillion. Well, there are 45 pages in this book, page 58 to 103, that absolutely guarantee, on page 83, that the alcoholic and the person living with the alcoholic, the Al-Anon, I hope there's some good Al-Anon members here tonight, you know, because it takes a smart woman to see through her husband, but a good woman to see her husband through. Well, I always say that and get some friends, you know. Todd. But that's true. It's a family illness, family illness, family disease. No, like, okay. But if the people will live by what is prescribed in these pages, absolutely guaranteed, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that never again would they have to suffer any of the ravages of what alcoholism is. And I'm not talking about broken fenders and turned over auto cars and burned down. I'm talking about the real spiritual ravages, the complete loss of dignity, the complete loss of self-worth, the complete loss of any enthusiasm for life, the complete loss of self-respect, the complete loss of hope, the complete loss of faith, of love, all of those things, completely, spiritually bankrupt. Guaranteed. Never again would they have to suffer those things, but they could live a very enthusiastic life, you know? They should. Everybody should be reading these pages every day because they're, I believe, divinely inspired, and that you can read them all the time and still see something. You see, mine's been read a little bit, and I still read them, and I go, "Holy cadoodle, Bon, how come you're still sober? You know, you haven't done that in a little bit of time. I haven't seen that. You know, I underline something else." And the funny thing is, in the business, you know, and that is my business, is in alcohol rehabilitation and doing an awful lot of AA responsibility things, which is the capacity to say yes to life, that I find maybe about 8%. See, I get a lot of people coming back to me. I run a little treatment center in Detroit that I started 23,000 alcoholics ago. So I get a lot of people coming back to me, right? And they keep saying, "Father," and they're half in the bag, "I was the best 12-stepper in my group, and I had a slip. I don't know what happened, I was a slip." And now they're half in the bag, and they're saying, "I don't know what could have went wrong." And I say, "Well, what's the 12-step? And they say, "Saving other drunks." I say, "No, it is not." "Working with other alcoholics." I say, "No, it is not." "Rescuing other alcoholics." I say, "No, it is not." "Carrying the meth." I say, "That's a third of it." I said, "Where's your big book?" "Oh, my big book, I gave it to my first pigeon 8 years ago when he got out of the hospital because he needed it more than I did." So I said, "What's the 12th step?" "Well, okay." So we turn to page 60. "Having had a spiritual awakening." He goes, "Oh, geez, here we go. I knew you'd do it to me. You priests are all the same, you know. Here we go, Bible thumping to me with the spiritual part of the program. You know, all of this stuff." And I'm saying, "Oh, my gosh, you know." I say, "Well, what is the spiritual awakening? Did you ever have one?" He says, "No, I looked all over for God, and I couldn't find him. I looked all over him, and I never saw him. I saw a few little green men up in the ceiling." I said, "Well, did you take your third step with another understanding person?" He goes, "What? What are you talking about?" I said, "Hey, turn to page 63. We found it desirable to take this spiritual step with another understanding person The wording, of course, was quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. That means using the voice, right? The larynx and making voice. Alcoholics and Al-Anon and a lot of people in the world, kind of like imminent action, you know, it means the idea starts in your head and it ends in your head and no one ever has to know what goes on, kind of Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Right? And you never have to put your money where your mouth is. Right? But this is an action program. It's not a program of ideas. It's a program of ideas, then add L for love, which means action. And so it comes that we have to put our money where our mouth is and say, hey, this is how I'm going to live. Here's the measuring stick. And when I'm not living up to these standards, as I said I would, with as they're prescribed in the internalization of the 12 steps of AA, well, then someone should be able to check me up on that.
Ah, I says, I didn't do that.
I say, well, did you write your 4-step? Oh, geez, don't write your 4-step. God, if you write your 4-step, you get drunk with all that negative stuff. You know? And it's only about 13 times, you know. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. That's once. On our grudge list, that's twice. Referring to our list again, that's 3 times. We place them before us in black and white, that's 4 times. I said, we place them before us in black and white. I had a guy drunk in my office once, half in the bag again, who said, that doesn't mean write it down. So I said, oh, it doesn't. So I let him keep talking, and then I practiced my banjo chords or something till I saw his lips stop. And I said, you finished? He said, yeah. I said, okay, turn the page, next page. We set them on paper. Page 68. I said, now tell me that doesn't mean right now. Yeah, we set them on paper. Page 69. We got this all down on paper and looked at it. Huh? 13 times it's written in here. Set them on paper. Look it down. Write it down. Oh, yeah, and here's the other one. Well, I haven't taken my 4-step yet. Don't know if I'm ready for it yet. Don't know if I've been in long enough yet. How long have you been in? 18 years. Well, my sponsor said that you got to be really comfortable. Page 64. 2 words that tell you when to take the 4-step. At once. No, okay, I was saying this funny, but we're talking about life and death. You see what the problem is, as I see it, is I go all over the country doing AA talks. I just did one down in McAllen, Texas or something. You know, and I come into McAllen, Texas, and I go, hey, yippee, boy, is this ever a neat spot? How's everybody in McAllen, Texas?
We're okay.
What's happening here in this city? It's really nice.
Nothing.
Well, what do you do for excitement? I mean, to make life enthusiastic.
Nothing.
Well, do you go to AA meetings?
Yeah.
Well, what else do you do?
Nothing.
Well, why don't you?
We're alcoholics.
Shoot them! You know, this is not a book on alcoholism. It's a book on a way of life, to be a better way of life. You know, when we drank, we thought, boy, that was really where it was at. You know what I mean. You couldn't dance worth a darn, but you had 3 drinks and you made Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire look like they had, you know, total paralyzed, right? Very shy with the girls and 3 more drinks and you were throwing more passes than Joe Namath ever threw in a football career. Couldn't drive, well, you know, 5 drinks, you drove the car like Parnelli Jones, you know, geez, easy. Even after I was ordained, I had a bottle of Hagen Hague. I preached a sermon, I'd make Fulton Sheen look like he had a speech impediment, right? Everything worked better. Everything. Well, you know, we really wrote a symphony that's proved which Mozart wrote one without a soul, and boy, it was all great. Then the funny ha-has turned into funny peculiars, and the funny peculiars turned into darn tragedy, and the bottom fell out of our world, and now we have sobriety, a gift from God. And I really mean that. I don't know of one person. I live in the third largest county of the United States of America, Wayne County, where 0.88% of the alcoholics are getting help tonight. That means 99.2%. Are continuing in the progression
of the worry and the anger and the self-pity and the depression and the lies and the hostility and the hostility and the hate and the revenge and the total stripping of any spiritual values, total stripping of any sense of dignity, of divine origin, of fun, or of anything. And how come you and I are in this room tonight? Because of some great thing, I don't know, great idea that we had, that I ever said, Vaughn, you better stop drinking. I never said that in my life. They locked me up. Now, I'm a religious Catholic priest of an order. That's much, you know, that means you got a father provincial, a big provincial. If he says, Beirut, you go. So he sits me down. It takes me 8 years to get ordained as an Abbe Father, and it's 363 days later. I mean, I was just getting ready to celebrate my first anniversary when they nailed me. And this guy sits me down because all my friends went to him, and he read out this tremendous act of all of the things that I had been doing. Now, poor Father Koozie Bear, I mean, he's a big guy, right? I used to call him Koozie Bear, Father Kuzno. And he's reading this thing out, and I can see the palpitation of his heart. He's almost in white shock, right? I mean, for a religious priest, you know, was only ordained a year, and this is what... You know what I said? Is that all he knows? Those amateurs all go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. They didn't know what went on after that. So I said, he says, you're going away, you're sick. I said, gladly I'll go away. I coughed, I said, yeah, I'll go away for 5 days. You know, and I'll come back in Canada, I'll get a boat, and I'll be a missionary to the Indians out in B.C. I stayed away 57 weeks. Not by choice, they just didn't unlock the door. Huh? I never said, hey, I think I'm drinking too much. Hell, no, there was nothing on. When they locked me up, I said, oh, my parishioners are just a little overreacting to my apostolic zeal. They don't know the fervor I have to stay out all night. We had a brother wake us up. I used to meet him every morning. I'd go walk before breakfast. I'd be going 4 days straight. And it was great. Now all of them, and then the tragedies happened, and now we have sobriety. You and I have sobriety, and the Al-Anon families too. And the Al-Anons have a freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity. And unless that sobriety becomes more meaningful, more purposeful, more rich, more fulfilling, with a greater zeal, with a greater enthusiasm for life, with a greater self-acceptance, with a greater love of self, with a greater freedom to be yourself, with a more purpose of life, so that you can really see the picture as God painted it, unless it has all of those great things happening in it, you're going to get bored. You're going to say, is this all there is? Is this all I'm bored? And then we know how to do to change our feelings. We know what to do to change the way we feel. See, I know a lot of people come to AA, and they think AA means, you know, go in, listen to a drunkalog, drink a cold coffee, eat a hard donut, and by damn, they better get me well. It means an awful lot more than that. And that's what I really want to deal on. As I go all over, you know, I'm saying, here we are. You know, people who are given a second chance in life are living on a daily reprieve with all of the tools of happiness, a way of life that brings happiness, that brings joyfulness, that brings enthusiasm, that brings zest for life. I mean, so many people, I'm an alcoholic, I don't know what to do. You got a job yet? No. Why not? The higher power hasn't given me one yet. What? Me work? Hell, let my wife work. My sobriety comes first. Who's dealing? Anyway.
I know guys go to 19 AA meetings a week just to get out of the house. You know. That's not what this program's about. This is not a course on alcoholism. I could stand here tonight and talk to you for 5 straight hours of what happens when a monoamine oxidizing inhibitor gets ingested into your liver. That is an extraordinary compound of alcohol dehydrogenase, which causes the oxidation of alcohol into acetaldehyde, acetic acid, carbon dioxide, water, and the mitochondria in the cells in your liver where the norepinephrine and serotonin accumulate in levels of the brain, which cause euphoria, and die drunk tomorrow. It's not what we know. But you people don't give a damn what I know, but you don't even care what I know, but you'd like to know how much I care. Big difference. Big difference. And I'm not here to put on a show. Now, that's my one prayer I make when I'm coming into the room. Quinn, you are not there to put on a show. Now, there's people here, you know, and especially the young people in the program, the people just coming in, you know, are screaming for a little something to believe in, a little something to hope in, and something to love. And that's really what we're all looking for. And the only way they're going to get it, you know, is through other people in AA and the internalization of the book. Yeah, the going to meetings is very, very important. Very, very important. It cannot be had any other way. And then the internalization of the steps. What's happening inside Vaughn Quinn in between meetings? What does this step mean to me today? How about brutal honesty with self? How about seeking what God's will is for me? And that's what I want to talk about. Now, what alcoholism is a conflict between behavior and values in the drinker. Is there a conflict between the alcoholic's behavior and the values in the drinker? All right? Now, just to identify, I'm not going to bore you with my drunkalogue because it's very, very dull. It took me 8 years to get ordained as a Roman Catholic priest in the Oblate Fathers. 2 days after I was ordained, I was called to say Mass at St. Mary's Hospital for the repose of my father, who had died in 1955. He was the chief surgeon, physician, obstetrics, gynecology for 26 years. Jack Quinn, son's ordained a priest. Go to the Catholic hospital, everybody shows up. You know, 83 nuns, 5,000 people, a bishop, everybody showed up. You know, everybody kissing your hands because you're a newly ordained priest. All of that stuff was going on then. And a day later, I go out to play golf. And I realized I hadn't played golf in 8 years, and I've one very fantastic thing happened to me. I was a very unhappy hooker. But I went back to what my youth was and said, a little pint of Mother Molson's Cure-All, and that's our brewery in Montreal, is all you need to straighten out the hook, and by darn it worked. Straightened out the hook. And that night, being an early ordained priest, everybody's always making a big fuss over you. My sister was throwing a little party for me, and I can remember how irritated I got when Martha, who was my sister, who I just left this morning, in Detroit, and she went back to Montreal. And this was in 65. And she's serving all these drinks. And then, you know, she comes around, she says, well, is it a time for, and my glass is empty, everybody else's glass is full. And she said, is it time for another drink? She said, oh, no, George hasn't finished his drink yet. I said, oh, my God, what the heck does George come here for, you know? Lordy be, Lordy be, my drink. So, being an oblate father, trained in the missions, adoptable to any human condition, I volunteered to be bartender. Drove my mother home, who at that time was a widow for 9 years, and she says, aren't you coming? And I said, no, a priest is never ordained for his own personal sanctification, but to build the kingdom of God and be about my father's business. I was thirsty. And I knew when it was a good party. And I was on my way to that party, and someone had just lent me a car, so I'm driving out to the party, and I pass Ruby Foo's nightclub, very prominent nightclub in Montreal, where I grew up and hung out when I was an athlete and also working as an account executive and all of those types of things. And I came back to this nightclub, and it was jammed, parking lot's jammed, oh! And I said, my God, how can that place be doing so well without my patronage? There must be a communistic-inspired infiltration movement going on in there, you see. I was thirsty again. I had 10 minutes to go, so I went in. But again, I'm in the province of Quebec, 85% Catholic, but very anti-clerical. But being an oblate father, who is adaptable to any human condition, zing, this comes off that quickly. And the loose flow in a wire and a sport shirt appeared and goes in. And being shy and an introvert, it took me 18 seconds to get something going in there. The next thing I know, I'm lying in a hospital. The nurse says, don't swear. And I said, oh, spit. They know I'm a priest. And I opened up my eyes, and I'm in the hospital, and I got a big pain in the back of my head. And I finally mustered up enough courage. I said, nurse, what hospital am I in? And she said, St. Mary's Hospital, Father. And that's where I had been 2 days before, zapping everybody with grace. There I was, lying in the emergency room with a pain in my head, not knowing that there are 18 stitches in my head, much less how they got there. Now, that's slightly a little bit of a conflict between what I was supposed to be doing as a Roman Catholic priest who had just spent 8 years in a seminary with God's grace to get ordained. A slight conflict. I mean, that was 2 days ordained. Now, the next 300 days it picked up, and I'm not going to bore you with all of that stuff, but I'm just saying that's how I identified. Things began happening in my life which I did not want to happen.
And when you're in the Catholic parish and you've got 900 people waiting for the 9 o'clock Mass and you show up at noon for the 9 o'clock Mass saying you've been on a sick call, well, the fit's going to hit the shin. And it did. And they locked me up. And there I was, God's gift to Christendom with my 7 degrees, ex-pro athlete, millionaire's kid, local boy maiden. There I was, standing in my paper suit. In a honeymoon jacket that didn't close in the back. You always had to walk with your back to the wall. Numbers in a hat in the nut house. Wasn't very funny. Well, we had lots to do. Weave baskets. In fact, I played on a baseball team. The cotton ball was that big, so if you hit somebody, you wouldn't hurt them. I hit that sucker over second base once. I'm running around second base. I met my own teammate coming the other way. Hi, hi. I said, oh, my God, you know. And he was a big guy, too. I'm only a small. I said, if we have a tie at home plate, I'm dead, right? I had lost all privileges as a priest. I couldn't say Mass. I couldn't do anything. So I stayed there 6 months, and that's how I got to AA, because I wanted to get out of there. And then after 6 months there, I went to Guest House, which is a rehabilitation center for a Roman Catholic alcoholic priests and brothers in Lake Orion, Michigan, and I stayed there 7 months. So my 5 days amounted to 57 weeks or whatever time. I can't, a little brain damage here, I can't figure it out. All right? So that qualifies me, and that's what, 18 years ago, doesn't make any difference how long, you know. It's a one-day-at-a-time program. Oh, you hear those two stories about, you know, the two alcoholics go and they call on a guy still drinking, you know, and they say, oh, come on. And he says, how long have you been sober? And one goes, 20 years. And he says, the other guy, how long have you been sober? And the guy says, 2 weeks. My God, how'd you do it? How'd you do it? Right? Getting back to my friend, you see, when I say he's in the bag and he's come to say, well, I've been in AA, I've been the best 12-stepper in my group for 8 years, and I say, well, you know, did you have what is the 12th step? And he thinks it's just save another drunk. I'm saying, no, it's not. Having had a spiritual awakening. I say, well, what is the spiritual awakening? I don't know. I've looked all over for God. I've looked all over for things. I've just prayed and I've prayed and I've asked God for all kinds of deals and I held out my hoop and asked him to jump through it. And, God, get me out of this jam. This is what I'll do for you. I won't drink for 2 weeks. It didn't work. I said, no, of course it didn't work. Look at the spiritual experience in the big book, page 569. That's a very important number for anybody in Detroit, because my address in Detroit is 569 East Elizabeth. Took me about a day and a half to turn the city around to get that number, but it wasn't that hard. Because that's really what AA and Al-Anon is all about, the spiritual awakening. And William James, the father of American psychology, spells it right out here. It's an educational process. An educational process. From the Latin word educare, which means to lead out of a person. Educare, to lead out of a person a hierarchy of values which was once there, but has gone dead, dormant, asleep, defunct, because of the primary illness, alcoholism, the progression of that primary illness, alcoholism. That's what's robbed people for this enthusiasm of life, for this self-dignity, for this self-worth, for self-preservation, for self-respect, for joy, for laughter. When's the last time you laughed? Remember before you came in AA? Or Al-Anon? You hadn't laughed in years, you know? You hung around for a while, and all of a sudden you went, oh, my God, what did I do? I laughed. I pulled three muscles in my back. Joy. Imagine if all the joy in the world was dependent on you and I in some days. Whew. And that's what we want to talk about. The spiritual awakening. You know, to get a sense of your dignity. To get a sense of the gifts which you have in you. And that's what's going to be brought about by the 12 steps. You know, AA is an awful lot more than just going to tables and talking about, see, we were all laughing about my drunkalogue that happened 18 years ago. You know, that was 1964. June of 65 is when I had my last drink. That's got nothing to do with what's going on in 83. Nothing. You know, and this is a now program, action-oriented to the future. And we want to get well, it's action-oriented to the future. Not living with a drunk log that happens, you know, 5, 10 years, 15 years ago. For God's sake, one thing. When you're at AA tables and when you're at Al-Anon tables, share with people how you're getting well. God, so many young people are coming to AA now just screaming for something to believe in, and we sit there and tell them about a drunk log that happened 15 years ago. Oh, I smashed a car. Oh, I smashed a truck. Oh, geez, that's nothing. I rolled a bus with crippled children in it. Oh, can you top this? That's not what the program's about. That's not it. If you are painstaking with this portion of the program, you will know new freedom, happiness, peace, serenity. Page 80. I'm forgetting that page. I'll find it. But that's it. This is not some type of a masochistic society where we're going to, you know, got to prove to everybody that I'm the most worstest person that ever came on the face of this earth. No, that's not what God created. Right? All right, you got to be, you know, be aware. Okay, page 83. If you are painstaking about this phase of the debunk, we are going to know freedom, a new happiness, with words serenity, and you will know peace. And that's what's guaranteed in these programs, in these steps, the internalization of the steps. Now, everything I say from now on has been stolen from these pages. Also, everything I say is directly applicable to any alcoholic age 2 or 200, and also to any Al-Anon member, because sometimes I'm giving the AA talk and the person's going,
you didn't do that. You didn't do that. Shut up. You practice your program, I'll practice mine. You take your inventory, I'll take mine. It's your program. Didn't do it your way.
Not. You know, some people pick up the book and they read how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who does whatever the heck they want with this program. Only taking to heart those things that are going to be convenient, fitting, and pleasurable for them to do, and of course casting aside anything which might demand a little pain or a little discipline or a little growth. They're sure to get well. Let it all hang out, be comfortable, and enjoy yourself. It doesn't say that. You know, I'm talking about life and death. I am, and it's your life and your death, and it's very, very serious to me. It's the most sacred thing that God's ever given me in life, and I'm putting it in those terms because if I have to tell you the real story, you know, we'd all be here wallowing in the morals of self-pity, because I see, you know, with 23, I have run my place has, what, over 200 beds in it. My place. Geez, listen to that, you know. The place at which I'm supposed to, I am the director. But then I got 165 people working. They do the work I play. But I see death every week. And I'm going to scare, you know, but, you know, scare tactics don't work. Doesn't say that. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Our path. There is a way of getting well and enjoying it and having fun and joining the party. I don't mean in the sense of a hilarious, you know, knee kafafing, knee slapping, belly laughing 24 hours a day. No. But things start making sense in life. There is a reason to live and a reason to die. And it's brought about when it's sure it's an individual program, sure it's a selfish program. What that means, if Von Quinn is willing to do the things that are prescribed in this program, go to meetings, read these pages, internalize them every day and say, hey, what does that step mean for me today? What am I really doing about inside? What's my vision of life? How am I relating to other people? The word morality means a journey of recovery in relationship to other people. That's what the fourth step is all about. I'll talk about that. Doesn't mean that because I'm a priest and because I got all these degrees and because I'm a director of the large center and because, you know, I'm the star of the Flying Father hockey team and because I, you know, do all kinds of, I have 6 fire trucks, 3 St. Bernard dogs and, my God, you know. I don't have to do that. Well, I did that in the seminary. I don't have to do that. Well, I did that in the hospital. I don't have to do that. Well, there's nothing for me to do. Go to the meetings and wait for other people to talk.
That's the loser. The loser at the table goes to meeting, you know, a winner goes to goes and listens. A loser waits for his turn to talk.
Straighten these people up. All right, so no, I'm not here just to do that. I, you know, really, it's your life, because I fly home tomorrow, bright and early, and I get my hockey equipment, and away I go to Bloomington, Illinois. No, that's not, I'm not here for, but it's your life, and it's very, very sacred. It's the greatest, you are an irrepeatable mystery of God's creation. The Magnalia Dei. And you know, the tragic thing, the most tragic thing is you don't realize it. You don't know it and you don't believe it. If I was to give you all a piece of paper and pencil right now and say, write me 10 good things about yourself, you know the saddest thing in the world? There'd be somebody here at dawn tomorrow morning going, oh, I got three. I got three. Does making my bed count? Yeah. Four! Yahoo! I got four! You know, is that what life is about? Is that what life and loving and living and laughing is all about? You know, and that's what's sad when we're given it right here, and the fellowship, and community, and people to serve, and that's the only way you're going to be happy, is to get out of yourself. The biggest pain which you and I have that stops us from living, from loving, from laughing, from growing is self. Analysis all the time. Self-preoccupation. We become so preoccupied with our own little world, eh? Our own little world and what's going to happen to us and me, and I. Poor me, I, and we forget about everything that's going on, and we can't get out of ourselves anymore, and we just get so turned in. And so that's what the steps are for. You know, so that we're going to be able to come alive. That there is hope, that there is joy, that there is fun, that there is a reason to live, that there's purposefulness in life, and that's the only thing I'm trying to, you can find it right here. And then practice these things. In the community. See, the first seven steps are AA, are to find out what makes you tick in a positive way. No, not, you know, just making my bed down. No, you all have, you know, irrepeatable. How come? All of the psychologists today tell us we only develop 10% of our capacity to hear the beautiful music that is around us. We only develop 10% of our capacity to see the beauty that is around us. We only develop 10% of our emotions to respond in a positive way to the situations in which we find ourselves. We only develop 10% of our capacity to love. We only develop 10% of our capacity to laugh, to live, to suffer with a purpose. How come? It means 90% of it goes undeveloped. That's tragic. And we're given the answers here. Where we can live, you know, live the 90% of it. Get out there and, you know, make life worth living. And the answers are here. And so that's what we want to do. That's what I want you to do. That's, you know, instead of saying, nothing. God. The whole AA program is built that way, you know, the first seven steps. What makes you beautiful? I do AA retreats. I'm going, as soon as I come back from the three hockey games, I take off again the very afternoon and go do an AA retreat. 71 people. And you know, here's the fourth step for those people. What makes you enthusiastic? Answer that. And you'll find out. What's life about? The whole thing in AA is to find out what makes you enthusiastic, what makes you beautiful, what makes you lovable, what makes you nice to be around, what makes you fun, what makes you good things in life, eh? So that you can practice the other five steps, 7 to 12, which means go back into the community of your marriage, of your relationships, of your workplace, your enjoyment place, your leisure place, whatever, and share with other people. Relationship to other people. It's not a me program. No. The Ten Commandments are pretty direct. You know, they're kind of like, you know, it would be nice if you did these things.
it's kind of like God saying to you, if you love me, would you really please do these things for me? You know, I created you and I'm sustaining you in existence because I love you. And I want you to be able to reflect back the beauty of my creation in the twinkle of your eye. And give a little credit to your mom and dad because, you know, they're the only ones who were around when you had to come into the world and they didn't have a whole hell of a lot to work with either. And kind of what belongs to other people, leave to other people, because if you get sticky fingers, you know, you're going to be in a lot of trouble, and it messes up the juridical system, and it makes the docs and the files in the court system last forever, you know, and it just gets very messy, and, you know, be darn discreet where you sleep, because that can get tacky as hell, and it can cause all kinds of community relationships, you know, and it's bad, bad news, breaks up all, you know. But this is a lot more direct. A lot more. This is a matter of life and death. I kid you not.
People keep saying, oh, you know, well, how do you do it?
It's no must in AA. And I go, what? Page 62. We alcoholics must rid ourselves of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. There's two musts in two lines. And we have to have God's help. There's two musts and two lines. When we have to, looking at the wrongdoing of others, financial or real, or if that had power to actually kill us, we saw that these resentments must be mastered. But how? We could not wish them away any more than the alcohol. There's three. Whatever our ideal, not idea, idea stays up there. Ideal's got an L, love means action. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm. Two more musts in two lines. How many am I at? Five? Okay, we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live a long and happy life. Whatever religious denominations we belong to, we must go back to the required or the properly ordained people and whatever that is. We must be hard on ourselves but considerate of others. When we can't find somebody to take the fifth step with, we must not use this as an excuse. Yeah, the fourth step, as I said, page 64, at once. At once after the third step. Immediately. Not 10 years later. Oh, there's the butte right here. Okay, we must not shrink at anything. We must lose our fear of creditors. Page 85. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. But we must go further, and that means more action. Working with others is an experience we must not lose. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. The person must decide for themselves whether he wants to go on. The desire to find God must come from within. How many am I at? Huh? 14. Eight? 18. All right, you know. And how? As the result of these steps. That's what it says. See, a lot of us think it's as a result, right? A result means a one-time catastrophic, world-shattering, bone-crushing event when Angel Gabriel comes down with his 26-piece orchestra of 8-foot-long trumpets going, da-da-da-da-da! Don't worry, Vaughn, you'll never drink again. See, we all thought that should have happened, right? Doesn't mean that. It says as the, T-H-E, big word. Yeah, you know what it means? It's a heavy word. I didn't know what it meant. When I was in school, I was 32 years old. I didn't know what it meant. It means continuous action all the time. It's a weekend off and go back on Monday, no. Doesn't mean that. Doesn't mean go 3 months and then, you know, take a little break and get out of town. No, doesn't mean that. It means the continuous action must be taken. I just showed you 18 musts. As the result of these steps, all these steps must be internalized.
people. See, what I'm trying to get at is there's so many people who I come across, and I just see is that they're robbing themselves of so much of the vitality of the program, of the zest for living. And we're trying to give a little hope. We're trying to say, hey, there's an awful lot of human suffering going on in the world. It's just tragic, you know, really tragic. And yet you and I, because we've been knocked on our potato, you know, and had a little bit of the ego knocked out of us, and we're given a chance to really start experiencing some quality sobriety, some quality life. And yet, because we're hanging on to a few things, or we think that all I have to do is go to meetings and listen to drunk logs and drink stale coffee and wonder why I'm not feeling any better. And it's got to be through the internalization of the steps, which are all written in the past tense, which means action must be taken. They're not written in the past tense because that's the proper way. And it's again, as I said, everything I say applies to Al-Anon members too, because, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same program. The program can be applied to anybody. The word alcoholic is only in the first step. We're not just talking about being sober. You know, you and I know people that are dry, but still very negative. No, who wants to be negative? Their world vision is very, very negative. I was doing a retreat in, I can't remember, Banff, Alberta. Now that's province of Alberta, Canada. God, is it beautiful, you know? I went up, I did the men's retreat, then I had 2 days off and I was going to do the women's retreat, so I went up to Banff Springs Hotel. In the middle of the Canadian Rockies, 15,000 feet mountains, all snow-capped. It's 6 o'clock at night. I have just come back from running. I'm also a marathon runner, right? And I just run 8 miles up there in the mountains, and wow, was it great. 6 o'clock at 6:30 at night, and there was a sunset, crimson red sunset, is redder than the seats you're sitting on. All of the evergreens standing at attention for this majestic sunset over the top of a 15,000 foot snow-capped mountain. I went, wow, look at that. Is that ever neat? This guy in the program looks around and he says, goddamn mountain's blocking the view. Thank God that we have the capacity to laugh at ourselves, but you know, that's you and I. That's you and I. How many times do we wake up and the mountains are blocking the view? No alcoholic automatically picks up a drink. Goes, oh, Billy Blue Blazers, what do you know? I just chuggled down some beverage. No, there's all kinds of telegraphing signs. Coffee's burnt. Toast is crisp. Eggs are greasy. Room's too full of smoke. Speaker's speaking too long. Wife doesn't understand. Boss is an idiot. Son's in the wrong. Everything goes negative. How are you? Fine. Negative. It's always run by a whole bunch of negative reactions to things. No response. Response means capacity to answer. Capacity to make a free choice and answer. Respondere, that's the word. It's Latin, I think, yeah. Capacity to answer to life, to allow it to challenge us and to become part of the solution instead of becoming part of the problem. And that's what the steps are about. But we got to get into them. You know, I get so many people coming, I don't know what to do in AA. I don't know what to say. Did you read the big book? No. Did you read 12 and 12? No. Did you read the 24-hour book? No. Well, you never know what to say. You don't put anything in the machine, nothing's going to come out. I mean, you know, until you're going to start experiencing life, it's got to be lived. It's got to be lived in the legs, in the guts. Life is an emotional response to situations in you find yourself at feeling level. It's not thinking. It's like wishing, you know. I race sailboats. A lot of people think we're sailing. Wish the boat go over there. You don't wish it go over there, you'll go the other way. You're sailing over there. You can't wish life. A lot of alkies are like hitchhikers, sucking their thumb, wondering why they're not going anyplace. Why doesn't somebody pick me up? Why doesn't the phone ring? If Charlie would only change, then I'd be happy. Charlie ain't ever, maybe never going to change. How many people do you and I know who blame their misery on other people? Well, I see that every day in my life. No freedom. Use your power of choice wisely. So, we get into the steps. The first step. It's not bad, eh? Little altar boy, you watch the priest do this in the pulpit, look at his watch. The altar boy says, what's that mean? Not a damn thing. Here it is, an hour, and we're only at step one. But my plane doesn't go till 6:45. I don't care.
And if most alkies, I'm a night person. I have a hard time getting up in the morning. I have a hard time getting up at noon, but I can stay up all night.
Most people's problem is they cannot love themselves. That's you and my problem. Carl Rogers, father of all American psychotherapy, you go and say, hey, that's the problem. People cannot love them. I don't mean standing there going, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? You are, you devil, you. Don't mean that. But be aware to the gifts that God's given you, the irrepeatable mystery of his love. If he was to come down right now and look in your eye, would he see the beauty of his creation, the twinkle of your eye? No. You're the only one who can change that. Now, if you had $1 million, it wouldn't make it. People say, just try me, though. You know? You'd be miserable. So the best way of finding out, you know, happiness in life is finding out all the things you can live without. Because in some way we become a slave to all the toils, toys, things we put around us and everything else. And so that's what the program is about. This is a positive program. It's not a program of self-flagellation. Oh boy, I'm really going to make up for the times I goofed, you know. Jansenism. Jansenism was a heresy in the Catholic Church. 1505, wrote Portway Alpha. The more miserable I am, the closer I am to God. Huh. Some people still believe that. I must be a saint. Everything's going miserable. God really must love me. I'm miserable. It's not what he put you here for. His will for you is that you be happy. That you be joyful. That my joy may be yours and yours may be full. If it's not, how come? You have to take responsibility for your life. That's another great thing that's going on these days because of B.S. Skinner and Watsonianism, and all that means is that there's nothing I can do to change. The worst thing you can do to a human being is to take away their self-worth. The second worst thing you can do is to take away their capacity to change. So we're all changing. We're not the people we were even 2 weeks ago. And you're not the people you're going to be. Someday I'm going to be holy. That's going to be a miracle. And so we deal with the first step, and everybody keeps saying, well, I've got to admit I'm an alcoholic and run through all these terrible things. No! The first step is a positive, creative acceptance of your human condition to work out your human destiny in this plot of toil which has been given for you to kill. Positive, creative acceptance of your human condition is the fact that you are an alcoholic, is the fact that you are a member of an Al-Anon. Is that a positive, creative acceptance in your life? Does that make life more creative to make things? Does it make it more positive? You got to ask yourself. No, you got to ask yourself. You really got to sit down. Take a little time with yourself and say, am I happy? And you go, yeah, sure. No. Just really get serious. Well, no, I'm as happy as I'm happy. Of course I'm happy. I'm a priest. I work. Give yourself some time. See, everything in AA is not pious puffballs in the sky. Everything in Al-Anon is not pious puffballs in the sky. It's the internalization of the same program which must be moved into the guts to move the legs, which is demonstrable, measurable, behaviorable action. Am I joyful? Positive, creative. Okay, before we came in the program, just look at two columns here. Right? Tebow, the psychiatrist, first friend of Alcoholics Anonymous. Before the act of surrender, I felt irritated. I felt pushed around. I felt ashamed. I felt guilty. I felt bitchy. I felt ill at ease. I felt negative. I felt remorseful, faithless, unworthy, no self-worth. Rejected. What's the word I'm looking for? Negative. And then after we come in a bit, after the act of surrender, it's I felt at peace. I felt composed. I felt joyful. I felt hopeful. Faithful. That life had purpose. That life had meaning. That there was a reason to live. That my presence did mean something. That I was loved, lovable, capacity to love, with the prayerful sense of meditation. Ooh, medication. Phew. Sought through prayer and medication, all right? Okay, which one? Which, you know, really, which, when people say, I don't know if I've taken the first step, which, you know, which column do you identify with? You know, I know some people, and every time you meet him, it's a crisis. I mean, oh, geez, Father, can I talk to you a minute? Oh, I just smashed my car up. You know, my dog just bit somebody. And on and on. Well, it's frightening. The first step means that we finally say, I cannot do it my way. Every alcoholic and person living with an alcoholic, they adopt the same trends, have a fantastic sense of unstoppability, and that sense of unstoppability has to get stopped. And we have to not fight anymore. If there's any type of fighting, page 103, well, I know it's there. Oh, yeah, it is. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody and anything. We have to. No more fighting. If we're still fighting, we're still trying to claim our own superiority over it. No more fighting. But there's got to be an act of surrender, which is a positive thing, so we can start seeing things positively. Listen to this. Everything that hits your gut negatively, every negative emotion that you and I have, and I got plenty of them, means we're perceiving reality wrongly. And we have to have the growing upness, at least the capacity to grow. Now, you're not going to like this, but all growth demands stretch marks. We have to have the capacity to say, hey, what am I seeing wrongly? Doesn't mean I'm never going to get mad. Of course you have. You have 11 human emotions in you. To be fully human and fully alive, all those emotions have to be working. And sure, you're going to get mad, but you can't get mad at somebody else. You know, how many times have you let mad at people and let them live in your head rent-free? And lose sleep over it. And beat up the kids and kick the dog, and the dog goes, bites the cat, and all that stuff. The cat chases a rat, and all, yeah. Because someone's living in your head rent-free. You know what he did to me? Another person. I used to get drunk at the Pope. He was sleeping pretty good in the Vatican. That'd be, you know, jail in Boston, Ottawa. Fixed his clock. Now, how many times we do that? What is it, Hamlet? I just read that today. Hamlet, Shakespeare, you know. Brutus, my friend, the fault is not in the stars, but within ourselves. You know, what's our basket full of? Is our basket full of resentment, revenge, paranoia, I'll get even, how could you do this to me? Fix them, I'll win, beat them, become number one. If that's it, it's all we're going to dump on the world. Or is our basket full of peace, freedom, happiness, serenity, joyfulness, capacity to love other people, to receive their love? That's it. You've got to figure out whatever I got's in me. And if I can't love myself, if I can't accept myself, if I can't make my alcoholism be a positive, creative acceptance of my own life and my family alcoholism, positive, creative acceptance of my own life, what am I going to dump on other people? Poor me. That's nothing. It's not me. It's just because the kids are getting screwed up a little earlier because they got the availability and they got more people digging holes of them, you know. More people practicing conditional love on them. You keep your room clean. Why don't you pass your exams? Why don't you be like your brother? Why don't you be like somebody else? Why don't you do this? Why don't you stop picking your nose? Don't bite your finger. Ooh. Yeah?
No one's else saying go out. Nobody's saying give it a best shot. Our whole treatment program, very, very unique things that go on there. You know, I can't go through all that with you, but all of it is geared to making life more meaningful, purpose rich, and fulfilling. And that's why there's 6 fire trucks, and that's why there's 3 St. Bernards, and that's why there's banjo bands, and that's why there's sailboats. Oh, fantastic summer. Fantastic summer. I just blew Michigan almost off the map. So, a guy lent me a sailboat, 42 feet long. Okay, the sailboat sleeps 6 people, right? You know how many I put on it? 15. And go for 3 days. Now, we got 15 people who are in treatment, and we put them on a sailboat, right? And you really watch starting people start relating then. Now, they've all been in treatment, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 weeks, and I put them on there. Men, women, they'd come in a port in Michigan. Come in a port, but people would die, right? Oh, because they tell me after, you know, they'd watch a sailboat come in with 50. Now, I got blacks, Chicanos, Mexicans, girls, boys, everybody on the thing. Coming into a port to say, oh, my God, call the police right away. Right? They had a fantastic time. We'd be in port an hour and they'd find out what was going on. Within 2 hours, everybody was at our boat because we'd have the musicians and we'd be the entertainers. Right? And all these people who had everybody said, you're no good, you're no good, you're no good. All of a sudden, they got the whole port entertaining them. They're watching people smile, they're watching people dance and say, hey, we're making this happen in people's lives. See, we all have to go to 4 hours of classes a day in the center. I run the center, but I mean, I got all these people working for me, but it's run just like Hitler without the warmth. It is. It is. You're up every morning at 6:30, 7 days a week. Saturdays and Sundays, you go to school for 4 hours. It is the only treatment center in the world. You're going to work on Saturdays and Sundays.